Can I have your attention, please? Can I have your attention, please? My name is Sonia Jabel Nathaniel Alexander Hockey. I'd like to serve you forever as a priest die very soon. It's now time to start finding your seats for Sabbath services.
Can I have your attention, please?
Stand up, stand up. Deny it.
Can I have your attention, please? My name is Sonny Ishalabo Benaya Hawkins, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and an honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Ishalabo now entering the sanctuary. And now I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Katan Hawkins.
Come on, show them everyone. You may be seated. May PCI be the teacher in one hand. The title of my speech is To Be Like Yeshua, We Obey. Now, to obey means to comply with, to submit to authority, to do what you are told. Okay. To be like Yeshua, we obey. Now, if you all turn over to Matthew 2, 14 and 15. And he got up and took the young child and his mother by night and left for Egypt. And remained there until the death of the Herod. And so was fulfilled what Yahweh had spoken by the prophet, saying, "From Egypt I have called my son." Okay. His mother was also obedient to her head's instructions. Yahshua was blessed in many ways because of this, so we are blessed. His parents set a pattern of obeying. His life was saved in more ways than one. Because of his parents' choices and examples, his parents taught complete obedience to Yahweh's appointed teachers. I see how this affected his attitude and choices later to obey, get baptized by Yochanan, and serve others. Yochanan did not feel worthy to baptize Yahshua, but Yahshua pushed it because this was proper. Yahshua didn't see things with pride. Yahshua taught that we will never be greater than our teachers. Okay. Now going back to the first page. Oh, page 3. Okay. When we obey our fathers and mothers and teachers, we develop wisdom. We also learn to build strong bonds with those in authority. Okay. Yahweh says in the law that this will make us live, make us live longer and be healthy. The house of Yahweh is like no other. Is like no other. Okay. I will always have people to teach me and help me grow. I will always have someone to see my potential and push me to get there. Even when I am big, a teenager, an adult, or maybe one day as I am giving more jobs or titles, I will always need to obey, and I will always need my teachers. I want you to remember that the peaceful solution helps us build a positive character and develop more wisdom. And with this, I like to turn it over to Sonny Joyful Ben for prayer.
If you all remain standing, it's my privilege and honor to introduce to you Deacon Benaiah Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I'd like to say a few things about decisions this morning. Now, some people look back to their lives and wonder if their life changes with the right ones. Some play the what if game. What if I moved here? What if I worked there? What if I married someone else? All of the things, the decisions we have done up to now is history and can't be changed. We can never go back, so second guessing the decisions made help no one. Decisions are based on the knowledge we have at the time they are made. If the decision was a bad one, it is because time wasn't taken to research further, or the info received was flawed. If, on the other hand, the decision was great, it could be the knowledge used for that decision was spot on. We make many decisions daily. Some are snap decisions made with little or no knowledge. And they're usually okay, but some have grave consequences. Today we're going to talk about a decision that could ultimately cause your death. The title of my speech is, "When You Feel Like Quitting, Think About Why You Started." Think back to when you found out about Father Yahweh and the house of Yahweh. What were you doing? Remember how the need to know about him was so overwhelming? We just couldn't stop studying the booklets, reading the book of Yahweh, listening to all the great sermons and wanting more. The prophetic words and the newsletters would come every month and they would be read cover to cover as soon as we got them in our hands. The waiting for them every month was torture. Remember your first feast, the joy you felt when the long trip was finally over and how the signs on Able Way were so inspiring. What was going through your mind when you drove through the gate and saw this beautiful sanctuary? And love and peace seemed to just ooze out of everyone. The great spiritual and physical food we ate at the feast, and we have the cleanest food anywhere. Those memories are a part of us and will always be in our hearts and minds. What about getting baptized? That was the culmination of the feast. The one thing everyone wanted more than anything else because it meant we belonged to Father Yahweh and were part of his family. Maybe the water was kind of cold and the Kohans or Kohanas held you under a little longer to make sure that the baptism stuck. The vow all of us made, do you remember it? I will remain in the house of Yahweh forever. We said it like three times so we would not forget. Look over at page 731 to Matithya 33 through 37. Verse 33 says, again, you have heard it was said by the people of ancient times, when a man vows a vow to Yahweh, or vows an oath to bind himself to some pledge, he shall not break his word. He must do everything he said he would do. In verse 34, but I say to you, do not bind with oaths at all, not by heaven, for it is Yahweh's throne. In verse 35, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, or nor by Abel, for it is the city of the great king. In verse 36, never bind an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. 37, but vow your vow, then let your yes be yes, or simply do not vow, and let your no be no, because anything more than this is from the evil one. So as you can see, vows are not treated lightly. Once a vow is made, we should do all we can to keep it. Now, thinking back to the feast, there is one experience that might top baptism, and that's ordinations. Remember the joy you felt when you or one of the family received an office? Now, it meant more work and many long hours, but it's all worth it. We don't mind the hard work because we're serving our family, and it gives us great joy. So if one feels like leaving, quitting the house of Yahweh, all these feelings and memories will soon be gone. The jobs we do here are not like the jobs in the world. They are certainly not what one expects. They all roll up your sleeves and put on your rubber boots and get down and dirty. Now, of course, there are many other jobs that need filling as well. We have bakers, computer experts, teachers, and yes, even guards. All teach us how to serve and protect the family of Yahweh. And the years fly by when we serve. When the load, the burdens, the tests, and trials get really hard, some people tend to stop and ponder on the world. Maybe doubt creeps in and the kingdom seems further away. They might wonder if the kingdom is really going to come. I mean, after all, it's been thousands of years and nothing has ever changed. Maybe they start to think about all the money they could have made if they had just worked on the Sabbath. There are many things that could get a person to question why they are here and why it would be better to just pack up and leave. The life you have here, you will not have in the world. So the things one learns here soon leaves the mind when a person leaves. The kingdom of Yahweh is the main reason we are here. Immortality could be another reason, or becoming a great teacher like Pastor could be yet another. Think on these things and the many reasons it is better to stay here. Now, before you give up, think about why you held on so long. Many of us have been here in the house of Yahweh a very long time and studied for years and have become righteous members of the house of Yahweh. You want to throw all that hard work away? 3 out of 4 will fall away. Why not be the fourth, the one who stayed and endured to the end? The promises made are still there. We just have to qualify for them. The temptation to quit will be greatest just before you're about to succeed. Time is short. Yahweh's kingdom is just around the corner, and now is not the time to leave. Look at the news and the world out there. We have wars, rumors of wars, sicknesses, STDs, disasters, no peace, no love, no truth, only people looking out for themselves. Do you want to be part of that world, part of that? So look at page 973, Revelation 3:3. And it says, "Remember therefore how you have received and heard, and hold fast and repent. For if you will not watch, I will come on you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I come on upon you." Now think about this. Do you want to be out there or in here? Protected and safe, or no protection at all and dead? Turn over to page 754 to Matthew 25 and look at verses 31 through 34. Verse 31, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory with all the holy Malachim with him, then he will sit upon his throne of glory." 32, "And before him will be gathered all of the peoples, and he will separate them one from another, just as a shepherd separates his sheep from the goats." And 33, "He will set the sheep, the righteous, on his right hand, but the goats, the wicked, are on the left." And 34, "Then the king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" We already know what giving up feels like. We want to see what it's like when we don't. Remember what you gave up to come here to be part of the greatest tribe on earth? The jobs, homes, and families, to come here to learn at the feet of the priests? Some had worked for companies for years and just up and walked away. Others came from prisons, and still others came out of the military. What did you give up to be a part of Yahweh's family? Was it hard for you to leave all you've known your whole life to come here and start anew? Was it worth it? Do you still believe in Yahweh, the one sent in Yeshua? Quitting is okay if you are quitting something that is slowly killing you so you can slip into something that will give you life. It is amazing how fast a person integrates back into the world when he or she falls away. Eating unclean foods and touching unclean things are just some of the things the fallaways go back to. Things of the world are not conducive to great health. Look at all the food additives, the vaccines, the badly filtered water, the fertilizer on our foods, and so on. The world is fraught with peril. Why live there? Why live in death when you can live in life? Here we have protection, and we learn how to live in optimum health. We learn how to protect ourselves from and our families from a horrible, lingering death. The pluses of staying here definitely outweigh the negatives the world has. It's not easy to hang on when one is tired. The countless hours spent studying will be wasted when you leave. When you leave, the time spent practicing the laws and learning to love them will soon be gone. There are thousands of reasons to stay in the house of Yahweh. What does it benefit you in the world? Turn over to page 2, to Genesis 2:17. And it says, "But the tree of the knowledge of righteousness and evil you must not eat, for in the day you eat of it, you will surely die," or "you shall die. And yes, you will surely die out there." Go to page 879 to Romans 8, and we'll look at 18 and 19. And it says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that will be revealed to us. For the earnest expectation of the creation waits for the revealing of the sons of Yahweh. So, are you giving up? Not me. And may Yahweh bless your understanding. If you please stand, I'll turn it over to the great Kohan Shaul Hawkins.
Shalom, brothers and sisters. Please be seated. And I am not here to give announcements today. Brothers and sisters, we're going to expound a little bit on the lamp lighting that teaching that Pastor's been telling us about and guiding us into. There's so much contained, so much meaning contained in this process that he's teaching us about. It really is amazing. And what we all need to see and understand is that the lamplight teaching is showing us exactly the way and the manner that Yahweh is fulfilling his 6,000-year plan for making mankind in his own image. It's all contained and shown in that teaching, in that session, the different things that we go through, the different phases of it. Now, as we heard yesterday in the sermons and we see every Sabbath here, this plan, Yahweh's plan, was pictured as a seven-lamp stand. All right, seven lamps. Why seven? We asked the young boys yesterday in workshops. It's because there's seven works to get this 6,000-year plan completed. Seven different eras, seven different time periods when Yahweh had a lamplight burning, trying to teach mankind his laws, which the light itself represents, which the one that he sets over each era, the one sent, is also pictured and represented by that lamp, by that single lamp, teaching and guiding the called out ones. Pastor himself is that last lamplight. We are the last ones of Yahweh's lamplight plan. It's been a lamplight plan from the beginning. We're just now catching up to speed here with what Pastor has actually been doing and demonstrating for us all these years. But I'm telling you, we never saw it. We never realized it fully until he broke it down in such simple terms in how he was raised. It's really amazing. And Pastor himself is following perfectly the example of Yahweh himself, who invented this plan, who invented the lampstand and had that representing it. And Yahshua, who also followed it perfectly, will see the examples and teaching by lamplight. Or I call it lamplighting, like I made it into a verb. You know, Yahweh is lamplighting us. Pastor is lamplighting us. And it's more than just lighting a lamp, because they've had lamps since the very beginning. Okay, big deal. And they always had to have a lamp at night, you know. So what? It's more than just the lamp itself, although it contains elements of that, but it's an attitude we need to develop above all things. It's the same attitude Yahweh had and has and has never changed it. The same attitude Yahshua had when he was walking on this earth. And it's the same attitude that pastors had from the very beginning of the house of Yahweh. Loving and caring for the children. The children. Now, the children are those aged 0 to 99+. All right, remember, Yahweh always told Moshe, now speak to the children of Israel. And he left the adults out. You guys step back. I'm only talking to the children. They were all children. And remember, pastors told us, I don't care how old you are, you're my child. All right, so we're all the children. All right, we are all the children of Pastor. We're all the children of Yahweh. All right, so this lamp lighting and picturing children, it's picturing us as well, the adults. All right, in all age groups. The lamplight teaching, as Pastor is showing us, he's getting down to the specifics once again, the specifics of exactly how and in what manner and how Yahweh displayed himself, the character he showed, and the attitude he showed in carrying out his plan. I want to read to you what Pastor said the other night at Seder, because the words Pastor chose and the words Pastor used in describing the lamp lighting, not just the lighting, but the lamp lighting process, the teaching process, are very telling. Pastor just doesn't pick words out of a hat here and throw them around. They carry a meaning, and they inform us directly of the attitude we need to approach everything we do in the great work of Yahweh, in every person, in every situation, because this was Yahweh's example. Now here's what Pastor said the other night, just a little bit of it. He said, the families with children and the lamplight I've been pushing. The electricity is okay if you can't afford an oil lamp. But listen to what he says. The oil lamp is the ideal thing. It cuts off the harsh light from around your family. It cuts off the harshness. You see that character that's coming through there? Cut off the harsh. The harsh that's pictured by these electric lights. Not that they're evil any more than after the feast when you eat leavened bread. You know, are you going to be eating sin? Unless it's unclean bread, of course. But it pictures it, all right? But the oil lamp itself, the dimming of the lights and turning on the oil lamp and how it's a soft, glowing light, that's how our attitude should be in approaching the entire work. He says what really makes the difference with the lamplight studies is sitting down with your family with no televisions, no phones ringing, no computers buzzing, you know, getting rid of the distractions of the world, the pulls of the world. All these pulls of the world takes people away from their studies and their thinking about Yahweh. Yes, we have to have the technology in the last days. It was invented for us to get this message out. I don't know if you remember what a cassette tape is, but the very first tape I ever got from the House of Yahweh, the sermon recording, it was on this thing called a cassette tape. And Pastor actually said on that this thing was invented for the House of Yahweh. And I thought, that's really interesting. Look what they're using it for now. And look what they're using all the other technology for now, is to bring the people down. So during this lamp lighting, we turn down, we shut off the technology. Now he says, the quietness around the flickering lamplight is very inviting to children. Inviting. Doesn't sound like a lot of bitching and griping and yelling and criticizing and condemning there, does it? That doesn't sound too inviting to me. It says, you get that invitation to this. It's like a welcome home party every night with the children. We're welcome. It's Yahweh is pleased to have us here. He may be displeased about certain parts of our character yet in our actions, but if he was displeased with us, we would be gone as individuals. He's working a process with us, a 6,000-year process. He said, it's like a welcome home party every night with the children. They learn to love it. They associate that with learning and loving to study, not dreading it. not dreading it because it's all condemnation and repercussions and constant criticism. That'll make a person dread. Oh, you know, they'll associate that. The mind makes connections. They'll associate the book of Yahweh with that. He said this same love multiplied with caring. Caring of the family, gathering with the children, finding out their needs. You know how you find out needs? By talking incessantly, right? No, you have to listen. You have to bend your ear down to their level. You have to actually listen without judging and forming an instant judgment. You've got to listen because there's a next step that's got to take place. He says, listening to with care. And of course, that was my words, the listening with care. But that's how you find out, gathering with the children and finding out their needs. That's a huge part of it. And think, I want you to think not just of the children at the table and a lamplight. I want you to apply this and think about the whole house of Yahweh, the whole plan of Yahweh. Think about what Yahweh did. Think about how Yahshua acted. Think about how Pastor has brought us along. Apply everything because he's teaching us something really, really deep here. And if we don't really dig into it, it's going to go right over our heads. We're going to miss it. And we're going to miss out. Because this all ties in with the jobs, like he was talking about yesterday, of naming the animals. And, you know, what a job just naming them is. But that's just naming them. You know, then you got to hook them up to plow with them and milk them and everything else. The naming, that's just the very beginning. But he's trying to get us to see how intricate and involved and how careful it had to be done. Just the naming. But this all ties in with this lamp lighting because it's the same attitude. Now he says, of course, and of course. Now notice this. Getting the little bit of righteous scriptures in every night. You want to leave them wanting more. You don't want to overdo it or wear them out. And you think how Pastor has taught us over the years and how many times he's gone over certain scriptures and certain prophecies, each time adding a little more detail to it, expounding on it, applying it more. Just go through the books of Israel. I don't have time, and I don't think I brought it, but the great Kohen Yedidiah wrote a letter, and I'll tell you that those books of Israel have actually saved his life. All right? They've saved his life. But it's here a little, there a little. It's here a little, there a little. You want to, I'm going to read that part again. Well, and of course, getting the little bit of righteous scriptures in every night. Now, a little bit is all us adults were able to take in and week out. So how much more would the children need a little bit every night? You want to leave them wanting more. You don't want to overdo it or wear them out. Start practicing that and you'll see a difference. Now, it's not an overnight thing. The world has everything instant. You know, you have instant everything, instant messages, instant satisfaction, instant improvement. No way. Not Yahweh's way. It takes time. It takes patience. You got to do it over and over and over and over. Think of 6,000 years. We can't even go 6 weeks. On some things, 6 days, and we're wiped out. Maybe 6 hours. Start practicing, and you'll see a difference, a big difference. Love will start developing. Love. There's got to be that love for Yahweh. Remember, that's one of the chief commandments, the greatest commandment, remember? You must love Yahweh with all your heart, but he forces you to love him, right? And if you don't, he knows it and he's going to hit you over the head. No, he developed it little by little by little in us. The more you read the scriptures, the more the love will grow for each person in the family. You know, we'll get to Maggie here in a minute. But turn over to I want to show some examples from Yahweh, and we're going to have to move here. But in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning Yahweh created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth became without form and empty, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of Yahweh was hovering over the face of the waters. Well, wait a minute now. He just created it, and how did it get that way? Without form and empty and darkness, with misery, death, destruction, ignorance, wickedness, and sorrow, as we see there, led astray by false doctrine. Is that what Yahweh created? How did it get that way? Do you remember? Well, Yahweh's original sons trespassed on it and made it a shambles. All right, remember when they created the dinosaurs? They had their wars going on, the fightings. They wanted to see the killing. Yahweh didn't create it a mess. He created it perfect. But they came along and made it a mess. Now, how did Yahweh react? Did he zap them? Did he destroy him? Did he go on a rampage, ranting and raving? Kick him out of the house, kick him down the street? What did he do? Now, in Psalms it says he counseled them. Now, I don't have the, because I had taken a picture of it with my phone. It's in the 18th book of Israel. You'll have to find it. It is verse 39 on one of the sermons. And pastor says, the mother and gods, the original sons. Now this was in Eob, remember? This was a few years after they wrecked the place, all right, and tore it up, left it a mess, and Yahweh had to get it ready. It was all part of his plan. Don't think he was caught off guard or anything. It was all part of his plan to get it ready for mankind. But then quite a few years later, in Eob, it says, and this is what Pastor was talking about in that verse 39 of that sermon, the mother and gods, the original sons, came before Yahweh, and there was hell to pay. No, that's not what he said. He said there was no hostility coming from Yahweh. He was still trying to teach his way when he said to Satan, where have you been? She says, I've been to the earth. Yahweh then said, did you consider my servant Eob? What would you get out of that? Here's Yahweh asking her, have you considered my servant? Notice, there was no hostility from Yahweh toward them. He was lamplighting them. He was asking them some questions to try to get them to thinking. He wasn't condemning them, chewing them out. Yeah, he pointed out what they did wrong, but he said, hey, look, I know what you all did, you know, and what the mess you're making, but look at my servant. Look what he's doing. Consider this, he said. But the hostility. You know, people can sense hostility coming from you, even if your actual words don't say anything hostile. You know, it's the underlying attitude, and people, especially children, can sense this if there's hostility. So keep this in mind. Keep Yahweh's example in mind here of how he lamplighted Satan and the gods years after they started pulling their stunts and after she devised the plan in her mind to kill all mankind. He was still asking her questions, trying to get her to think, okay? And I remember years ago that Pastor taught us that Yahweh never gets perturbed. You can't perturb Yahweh, which means to upset, become unsettled, or knocked off balance. You can't knock Yahweh off balance. He's got a perfect plan. So when things don't exactly go the way we think they should go, you know, we don't need to be getting, we need to follow Yahweh's example. We need to take it in stride like he does, knowing and trusting that his own plan is going to work, and it's going to continue to work, and it's going to produce the results that he intends if we'll keep up doing our part. Kicking and screaming and throwing things and yelling, you know, getting everybody upset. No, that's what the Catholic Church does. They try to use force. But remember, we heard it again yesterday. It's in the hidden codes. There's no peace through threats or force, period. No peace through threats. All right, but that's just one example here of how Yahweh is lamplighting in his 6,000-year plan. And he had seven different lamps, each at a different time, and where these messages were going forth. And they were all centered around the center lamp. Do you remember who the center lamp is? Yahshua Messiah, that's right. And that's the theme of the feast, that we want to be just like Yahshua Messiah, who is perfect, just like Yahweh. He saw what Yahweh was doing. He saw Yahweh's plan. There's no denying the misery, like we just read here in Genesis. Here, if you look at that darkness, meaning to be led astray because of false doctrine. And keep in mind everything pastors taught us about Genesis 3 and 4 there. And the false doctrine, remember the two priests, the two trees, mean, and what their result was, meaning misery, death, destruction, ignorance, wickedness, and sorrow. But Yahweh saw that the light was righteous. And he says, come to the light. And he draws us to the light, to the lamplight. It's not harsh like the world. We may have to suffer things that we go through here, of course, because we're testing and proving that we're not going to lose our cool. We're not going to lose our self-control when these tests and trials come here, because I want to show you some of these little tests and trials. And if we look at Yahshua, I'll be turning over to Matthias 16. Yahshua gives us some perfect examples of this lamplighting process in action here. Because he had a bunch of guys that they weren't always the sharpest tools in the shed and the brightest, but they were chosen by Yahweh like we are, brothers and sisters. No matter what we think and of our, you know, mental abilities or whatever it is, that none of that matters. You know, if we'll follow what Yahweh's teaching us, he's going to give us the use of our subconscious mind, which everyone is born with. And when we get that, we are going to be, like Pastor said yesterday, we're going to be so blown away by it, we can't even imagine. We can't even imagine. Our conscious mind can't even picture what it's like with the subconscious mind. But you know, the disciples, remember, and Pastor told us they were young men. You know, Yahshua was fairly young himself. Not a boy by any means, but the apostles were young, and they got a little bit goofy at times. All right, if you look at Matthias 16, in verse 5, you know, and they forgot to do stuff. And when the disciples had come to the other side of the lake there, the Sea of Galilee, because Yahshua went ahead of them, all right, and they came later, and they had forgotten to bring bread. Verse 6, and Yahshua said to them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. That must have been two brands of bread that they sold back then, right? The disciples here discussed this among themselves and said, oh, this is because we didn't bring the bread. Oh, man, he's upset now we didn't bring the bread. But Yahshua, aware of their discussion, said to them, oh, you of little faith, why do you discuss among yourselves the fact that you brought no bread? Do you not yet understand? And the fact of the matter is, they did not yet understand, even though he had been teaching them for some time, day and night, teaching them over and over. You know, it takes time for this stuff to sink in, brothers and sisters. Think of yourself. Put yourself here as this, and pastor as Yahshua. He says, do you not remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many baskets you gathered up? Nor of the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and the number of baskets? He just didn't do this once. He did it more than once for them. How is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but that you should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees? He didn't start chewing them out. And then they understood that he did not caution them to beware of leaven, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Oh, how many times have we said, oh, I get it now, Pastor. Yeah, now I see what you've been reading to us for all these 40 years. Oh, yeah. How could I have missed it? It was right there in black and white. But we missed it, didn't we? Yahshua was lamplighting him. He was patiently teaching until they came to understanding. He didn't demand that they understand it instantly. Did he kick them out and get 12 new ones? You guys are fired. Go home. Yeah, I got some interviews to undertake here. I got to find 12 new guys. You guys had it. You're washed up. No, this takes years. Brothers and sisters, 6,000 years for the whole thing, but about 30 to be exact, 30 for things to really gel in the brain. Now, let's look at Mark 4. All right, here's in Mark 4. Another example of, you know, them not fully trusting and not, you know, putting their full belief in what Yahshua was doing and saying for them. In Yochanan Mark 4:35, the same day when the first evening began, he said to them, let us pass over to the other side. When they had sent the multitude away, they took him just as he was in the boat he had been in, and other little boats were also with him. And a furious storm of wind rose up, and the waves beat over the boat so that it was almost swamped. Yahshua was in the back part of the boat, asleep on a cushion, and they awoke him and said, teacher, do you not care if we perish? How can you sleep during a time like this? Then he arose and rebuked the wind, displaying this power that Pastor told us about yesterday, and said to the sea, be quiet, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said to them, lamplighting them out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, what kind of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? You know, they were shocked and surprised by this. All right? Everything hadn't fully sunk in. But Yahshua patiently taught him. He kept working with him. All right? He had to, remember Shaul wrote, bear with the failings of the weak. As long as they didn't run away from him, he kept working with them. He didn't quit. You know, it wasn't constant criticism and constant condemnation. He was very patient with them. And, you know, how, as Pastor brought out, and you could study this in the Reverence of Yahweh series, you know, hostility and fear, it doesn't breed reverence. You know, it breeds hatred, actually. Because the King James has that word fear. But fear, Pastor taught us, leads to hatred. Now, care and concern, and I mean true care and concern, beyond just giving them a few loaves and feeding 5,000 people, I'm talking about true, deep concern. This true love. This is what produces reverence. Now, turn over to Matithia 26. Now we see the disciples are getting a little bit older, a little bit wiser, a little bit bolder even in their ways. Not going to scare them off, are you? Well, let's look at Matithia 26. In verse 31, then Yahshua said to them, now this was the night he was betrayed, after the memorial, after all the teachings, after the great prophecies, and we'll go back, but what he showed him in Matithia 24, here, remember, all these prophecies he was teaching and explaining, all the parables that he taught him, that he spoke, and then he called them in and explained the parables to them one by one. Because the parables, that the world says, parables were given, you know, to make it easier to understand. That's not what Yahshua said. He said, "There, I give parables so that the world may stumble and fall backwards." They didn't catch the parables. But he taught the disciples the meanings of those parables. Remember, he brought them all this way. This is the end here. Okay? This is it. They just had Yahshua's memorial. And he had told them what was going to take place to them. And he says to them, Yahshua said to them, all of you will be offended because of me this night. After all his training, all his teaching, he says, all of you will be offended. Let me see something. Look at that letter A. That's a letter A, right? Yeah. It says, meaning scandalize, entice to sin, entrap, trip up, apostasy or displeasure, occasion to fall, stumbling block. After all of his time and energy and effort and training, this is what he tells them. You're going to be offended by me. All right. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd and the sheep of the flock be scattered. Then he tells them, but after I'm raised up, I will go before you into Galilee. Kepha, he was the bold one, and answered and said to him, though all the rest are offended because of you, I will never be offended. Yahshua said to him, truly I say to you, Kepha, that this very night before the cock crow, you will deny me three times. Three times! Kepha said to him, nuh-uh, even if I must die with you, I would never deny you. And all the disciples said the same thing. Well, we see there in the next verses, turn over to 69. Well, they scattered, okay? They scattered. They, even in praying with Yahshua, they couldn't stay awake. And I doubt if that's the first time Yahshua had them up and praying with him at certain hours, okay? But they couldn't stay awake. You know, they were still growing, brothers and sisters. He wasn't done with them yet. All right, but they scattered. And then here in verse 69, as Kepha sat outside in the courtyard, a girl came up to him and said, "You were also with Yahshua of Galilee." But he denied this before them all, saying, "I don't know what you're talking about." Then when he went out to the porch, another girl saw him and said to those who were there, "This man was also with Yahshua of Nazareth." Then he denied this again with an oath, "I do not know the man." Then after a while, the bystanders came to him and said to Kepha, "Surely you are also one of them, for your speech gives you away." Then he began to call a curse upon himself and to swear. Think about this now. All right? Really think about this. This was a man, a young man, growing, trained by Yahshua himself. And look what he did. "I do not know the man." And immediately the cock crowed. And Kepha remembered these words of Yahshua, "Before the cock crow, you will deny me three times." And then he went out and wept bitterly. No, he wasn't pleased with himself. And he wept bitterly because of it. But did Yahshua say when he was on the stake, "Wait till I get down from here, Kepha. You're going to get it. You're through, young man." No, not at all. We're going to look at that too. If you look over at Yochanan 21. Now here it is. In Yochanan 21 verse 1. You know, I'm telling you, it takes a while for things to sink in. And they couldn't have had, you know, they had the, you know, pastor's the greatest teacher in the world, and Yahshua was the greatest teacher in the world in his day. And he was with them day and night, like pastors with us. After these things, Yahshua revealed himself to disciples again. He had already revealed himself once. You'll have to go back. We don't have time to read every part of this, but in the previous chapter there, and how Thomas didn't believe it was him. Oh, I got to stick my fingers in the holes. Come on now. You saw it take place and you got to stick your fingers in the holes. After all this training I've given you, after all these sermons, after all this teaching. But they eventually got it. Now, and it says in verse, well, look at verse 30 in the other one. In the chapter above, in verse chapter 20. Now, Yahshua truly did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in the book. But these are written so that you might believe that Yahshua is the Messiah, the Son of Yahweh, and that believing you might have life through his name. That's what this feast is all about, brothers and sisters. The Passover sacrifice. Yahshua's blood covering our sins if we repent and convert. That convert is not overnight, as we're reading right here. Now, I'm not saying we have a license to sin by any means. You know, brethren, you can't take these things and make excuse for yourself. You know, apply these things to your life and do like the apostles did here. And he says, but now back in verse 1 of chapter 21. And after these things, Yahshua revealed himself to the disciples again at the Sea of Tiberias, that's the Sea of Galilee. And this is the way he revealed himself. Gathered together with Simon Kepha, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael of Cana of Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples of his. Simon Kepha said to them, "I'm going fishing. I'm going back to work. I can't wait around like this. I'm going back to work." He went back out to world and work. All right, they said to him, "We're also going with you." And they went out and immediately got into the boat. But that night they caught nothing. Now when the morning had come, Yeshua stood on the shore, but the disciples did not know that it was Yeshua. Then Yeshua said to them, "Children, do you have any food?" They answered him, "No." Then he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find." So they cast, and they were not able to draw it because of the multitude of the fish. Because of this, the disciple whom Yeshua loved said to Kepha, "It is Yeshua." Now when Simon Kepha heard it was Yeshua, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and jumped into the sea. Meanwhile, the other disciples came in a little boat, for they were not far from land, dragging the net with fish, and so on. And they went and had a meal with Yeshua. And then Yeshua told Kepha, we don't have time to read it all, but in verse 15 to 22, Yeshua told him, "Feed my sheep. Do the work of Yahweh. Don't go back to that old way. I'm ascending to my Father. I'm going to send you the Comforter. I'm going to send you. You're going to get a greater portion of Spirit Holy that's going to open your minds to everything you've learned, and you're going to do a great work here, Kepha and the others. You got to do this." And he told him three times he loved him, and then, "Feed my sheep." We're the sheep that they fed, brothers and sisters, because the disciples grew up, they did the work Yeshua gave them, and they produced this for us that was held in prison for 1,500 years and brought to Oklahoma, and understanding given. We're going to see this here, and here we are. Let me see. Did I get that, Matithia? Oh, yeah. Go to Matithia 23. I want to show you about Yeshua's love, because he just didn't love his disciples. Remember, he's drawing everyone, Pastor said. Now, everyone wasn't on earth at the time Yeshua was speaking his words, but this is what he was talking about here. In Matithia 23, verse 37. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who murder the prophets and stone those who are sent to you." Now, if that ain't going astray and following the gods, you know, and he's still saying, listen what he says he wants to do. "How often I wanted to gather your children together as Maggie gathers her children under her wings." Think of Maggie here and Pastor's upbringing, because this was the example that Pastor was shown by his own mother. "But Yeshua, I wanted to gather your children together, but you were not willing." And then he left them started into the prophecies. "Behold, your house is left to you deserted. For I say unto you, that from this moment you will not see me," because he knew what was going to occur to him and where he was going to go next, "until you say," now this is many years later, 2,000 years later, "blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh." But in order for that one who is coming in the name of Yahweh, he also had to be gathered, as Maggie gathered her children under her wings here and lamplighted. He had to have that in his life so he could do exactly for us what Yeshua did for the disciples and what Yeshua set up for him in these last days. It's truly amazing, brothers and sisters, because, and I want you to think about this, we'll get into some of the science of it later, but Yeshua taught his disciples who, and I want you to keep this in mind, because sin has wrecked all of our brains, brothers and sisters, all right? Living in this sin-sick world, Yahweh's healing us right now. But Yeshua taught his disciples who had adolescent brains and they weren't fully developed. They didn't start using the prefrontal cortex, they call it, till about age 30, which that's the age Yahshua was when he started his work. Now, don't think, well, I only have half a brain, so I can't do this, because even the science shows this, that righteousness, putting righteousness in, can help overcome this lack of development. It speeds up the development, okay? It takes effort on our part as well. But he was ever patient and long-suffering with them, as Yahweh is long-suffering, slow to anger, long-suffering means. Slow to anger, patient, not perturbed. Okay? Now, Yahshua, you know, he was 30 years old, fully developed brain, and ready to endure all that he had to perform and suffer on this earth. And think about it. Maggie, listen closely to Pastor's descriptions. His mother, Maggie, never left them feeling worthless, hopeless, and ready to give up. She gave them hope. That was in, think again what Pastor spoke to us that night of Seder. A welcome home party. Welcome, making them feel wanted, needed, and loved and cared for, making them feel that. She truly loved and cared for her family, just like Pastor loves and cares each one of us. Remember Pastor's promise to Yahweh, when there was nobody here, he said, Yahweh, whoever you send to me, I will use them in this work. I'm not going to cast them aside. I'm not going to get rid of them. I'm going to use them. I'll tell you, brothers and sisters, that if we could go back 30 to 40 years ago, back when we kept the feast in Abilene, you would be shocked at the things that took place in the house of Yahweh. But did Pastor run us off? Did he say, I'm through with you idiots? You'll never learn. You're done. No. Week by week, layer by layer, every Sabbath service, every week. All right? Now, we have a ways to go, brothers and sisters. We really do. We got so much to learn, but not much time left. You know, remember Matthew 7:21. Turn over there. Not everyone who says to me, teacher, teacher, will enter the kingdom of Yahweh, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Don't forget that lesson from Yahshua's memorial. That's the key. Now, to close here today, let's look over at Ephesians 6, because we don't have much time. Children, obey your parents in Yahweh, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, and consider what they're doing for you, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Don't give them mixed signals. Don't discourage them. Don't make them feel worthless. In the discipline and instruction of Yahweh, the way Yahshua did with his disciples, gently, patiently. You know, here he was in his worst moments, hanging on the stake. But he didn't give up on them, did he? No, he went straight to them when he was resurrected and continued working with them. Servants, be obedient to those who are your rulers according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and insincerity of heart as to the Messiah, not as men pleasers when their eyes are upon you, but as servants of Messiah, as doing the will of Yahweh from the heart, because that's who you're serving. And in doing so, you're serving everyone that Yahshua is drawing to himself, wholeheartedly rendering service as to Yahweh and not as to men, knowing that whatever righteous thing anyone does, he will receive the same from Yahweh, whether he is bond or free. And you rulers do the same things towards them, giving up threatening, knowing that your own ruler also is in heaven, and there is no respecter of persons with him. Brothers and sisters, let's fully put this lesson that's contained in this simple lamplight teaching that is brought back finally after 2,000 years to this earth and to us brought back. Keep this in your mind. Put these lessons to use in your life, because we've got 2 billion coming here that we need to take care of, and that's only the start of it. If everyone would please stand, Yahweh bless your understanding.